Drunk on Comics, episode 115. This week had us talking some Daredevil, Black Market, The Avengers, along with the larger size issue of The Fade Out. We're hoping that our $1 million loan will come in for the Action Comics bidding that's currently going on. We also talked about some network deals for Boom, and The Rock gets to choose between good and evil. So go make a 6-shot alcoholic drink and enjoy episode 115 of Drunk on Comics.
Just give him a little tappy.
Yeah.
Good tap, tap, tap. Go to your home, you fucker. That's not exactly the quote.
No, it's not.
Wait, do you remember where that movie, that's from?
Yeah, it's from Happy Gilmore.
Really?
What part?
Yeah.
The give it a little tappy?
Oh, tap, tap, tap it in?
Yeah, just give it a little tappy. Yeah, tap, tap, tappy-roo.
Good. That's a good impression, Derek.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Was it halfway decent?
Squeedy-pee? I don't know. That was a shame.
Oh, looky who's here, Mr. Penguin. That, yeah. All right.
Anyways, we are drunk on comics.
We're drunk on a lot of shit today.
Yeah.
What do you mean, what part, Kevin?
I don't know. I've only saw the movie like a couple times.
Oh. Well, he was putting. He was trying to get the ball into
just
the hole.
Put it in.
And what was his caddy pro guy's name, Carl Weathers?
I forget.
Carl Weathers?
Yeah.
He came on screen the first time I saw him. I'm like, Carl Weathers.
Yeah, Chubbs.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Chubbs would always tell him, just tap it in. Tap it in. Just tap it in. And so they was like, just give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
I just forgot at the ending of that when he marries the alligator in heaven or whatever that he finally killed.
He didn't marry the alligator. You. No, he's just seeing dead people in heaven, and the alligator was there.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought it was like a happy ending for Chubby. Or was it Nubby? God, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie, too.
Oh, okay. All right, well.
Let's talk about shit we do know, comic books.
That's probably what the director intended. It just came off as you perceived it, Derek.
Yeah, like the correct.
But Tony got it right.
Yeah, all right. Let's start with Off the Shelf, which is once again brought to you by Grand Con, which is a comic and gaming convention happening here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, September 19th through the 21st, so we're less than a month away. It's going to be at the Crown Plaza, and we're going to be there, and there's going to be a lot of other people there. So go check them out at grand-con.com, and then also later this week you are going to hear a special edition chat with the guys from Grand Con, so keep your ears peeled for that. Should I start?
Yes.
Yeah,
you guys are both looking at me like, oh,
dude,
fuck.
That's the way we always look at you.
I know. All right. So this week, Daredevil, number 7. I haven't talked Daredevil in a while.
It's been like a month, yeah, at least.
Excuse you guys, I'm going home. No, it's... That with Daredevil, one of the reasons I want to bring this one up.
He's still cooking it in California.
Well, yeah, but except in this one, he's in Wakanda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But this is one of the rare issues where Javier Rodriguez is doing the artwork versus Chris Samnee, and that was when I first started reading this. I'm like, man, I think this is going to be my book this week because. The artwork that Rodriguez does in this is so classic, like, you know, to me, like, Silver Age and Bronze Age style, as far as, like, just beautiful layouts, great angles, you know, just strong character work. The colors definitely pop, but it made me feel like I was a kid again, going back looking at the way that this book laid out, and I really enjoyed that little bit of sense of nostalgia with obviously today's influences on it, but it was just absolutely...
Well, that's apparent that there's more influences from today, because honestly, though you have a soft spot for your nostalgia, I look at it and it seems very modern.
It is. Well, I mean, but if you look back at like some of the older, you know, like even Frank Miller Daredevil books and all that.
There's a disconnect. I'm talking old shit.
Oh yeah,
I'm talking 60s, 70s. You're talking Frank Miller style stuff.
Yeah, and well, I mean, like, and I guess maybe more bronze, I should say, than silver. But I am, okay. But from the silver, a lot of it is more of the panel layouts and a lot of the kind of the staging. But the Frank Miller definitely gets kind of more into the expressions, and some of the angles and all that. But gorgeous work on this book. So that was kind of the main thing. The other thing that it's a fun story, and I hadn't realized somewhere along the way that Black Panther is not in charge of Wakanda anymore.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, that's something I wasn't aware of. But his sister is now the queen, and
because I'm assuming it's because he wanted to. He couldn't fully do his duties. Is that something to do with it, or did his sister be?
No, specifically something was with the war and. Between them and Atlantis or wherever Namor's from, had something to do with that.
Okay.
I think.
Sorry, Derek.
Old age and can't get over storm and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways. Yeah.
So it's
Jinx.
Yomi Coke. this is a good, really good story. And in the last issue, they, you know, did reveal a little bit more about who Matt Murdock's mother was, which I'm not going to really get into all of that. But in this one, he has a chance to talk to her. And, you know, Mark Waid did a really, really nice job with this story because they dealt with something in here that I thought was, it was actually fairly timely considering, you know, some of the things that we've talked about recently. When Matt Murdock's mother had him as a baby, she went through postpartum depression. And she ended up leaving because she couldn't handle it. She was a threat to her son's life and all that. And it was handled so well in here, you know, talking about, look, this isn't your fault. I mean, depression, it was a chemical thing that, you know, and Matt being an attorney said, I've represented people who have gone through depression and have had this. And, you know, there are things that happen chemically in the body that aren't always somebody's fault. And so he's, you know, it was a really good, solid story where you got to kind of see, I mean, and from a guy's standpoint like us, I mean, we're not ever going to know postpartum depression, but we can maybe understand depression a little bit. But the cool thing was at the very end, there wasn't a letters column like there normally is. But Ellie Pyle, who's the editor, put in a full page of information about postpartum depression and the different types and, you know, what people go through with it. There's facts in here like, you know, 1 in 7 new mothers and 1 in 10 fathers have depression or anxiety during pregnancy or postpartum. And it was kind of interesting to hear, but I'm giving this out as, you know, doing our civic duty. The place where you can go to get the information is www.postpartum.net. And there is a support, what they call warm line, not a hotline, but a warm line. And that number is 800-944-4773. So I was just really impressed with the way that they handled this, that they were able to take something as serious as this, work it into a solid story, make it a hopeful thing at the end, add to the characters, and keep you entertained all at the same time. It was a very, very tough thing for Waid and Rodriguez to actually be able to pull all this together and not make it seem like a gimmick, but instead just a really meaningful story that adds a lot more layers to everybody in here. I do want to give a little shout out. Alvaro Lopez did inks, and Rodriguez did his own colors on here, and Joe Caramagna did the letters. So that was Daredevil. Cool story, you know, and I didn't spoil anything in here really, but it's worth taking a peek at on there. So that's that one.
I have what is culminating in.
How do you know Kevin didn't want to go?
Kevin, did you want to go?
As soon as I saw that book fly open, like, Tony's ready.
Yes,
I am ready. He's bubbling.
Yes, I
let it explode. Come on, Tony.
Just release. No,
all over.
New Avengers number 23, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Kev Walker, color Frank Martin.
Sorry, we're laughing over here because we're pigs.
So, Avengers, eh?
Yes, Avengers. We haven't really touched on this story in a while because Matt hasn't been here for a while, so we haven't really, just like Derek hasn't talked Daredevil in a while. Avengers is fucking sweet right now, and it is really, as they've talked a lot in the, there's these events that are coming up within Marvel come fall and spring, all tying into what's been going on within the Avengers, where you have one of the Avengers lines, they're dealing with time travel, and then you have this one that you have with the whole multiverse and planets colliding and universes dying. You kind of start to see what this whole Access event's going to be about, where they've said good guys turning bad and bad guys turning good, and what's the in-between there. What just recently happened was the Illuminati, the secret Avenger group that have been out trying to prevent world catastrophe, pretty much found out that they don't have the balls to actually blow up other planets. As I said, there's only one way to stop an incursion, meaning one universe has to die, or they both die. So you might as well just save your own and destroy it. They didn't realize, though, the few worlds that they destroyed before had actual good people on them. That was when we talked about that, like, Justice League type group. And when they found that out, they just said they couldn't do it. Like, how could we choose to destroy this other world? Except for the most awesome person in the world, Namor, who said...
He's pretty sweet.
Yeah, pretty much he goes...
That was like totally Man Crush Monday going on there for you, Kevin. They can't hear the disappointment on your face at home. You need to expand on that.
Well, no, I was giving an opportunity for Derek to move, for Tony, the other white guy here, to move on with his review.
Okay.
All right.
Namor takes the detonator and just says, "This is what kings do. You know, you guys are all weak." Staying straight to character of who Namor is. But now you see everyone else realizing they can't do this again. Namor's somewhere else. So each of them are all pretty much knowing the world's going to end. They have like 6 hours. And throughout this particular issue, you see each one of the Illuminati going off to make amends with the end of the world. Like, this is the end times, not one of those... Oh, Galactus is coming and we're going to save the day thing. They know 100% they don't have the balls to destroy another planet. And they're the only ones that have the means to that. So it's going to happen.
You know, I gotta say, that kind of bothers me a little bit as far as the storytelling in general. Because heroes have to make tough choices. And it's kind of like, you know what? All right, 2,000 million... trillion people are going to die. It's going to happen. But I can save half of them. Okay. Nah, I'm not going to save half.
Here's where I think, though, that they're thinking is these incursions have been ramping up and happening more and more often. Pretty soon, you're just going to have to realize we can't just keep doing this. Let's make amends now. We're not going to even try to do any other ones. I don't know what all the rational thinking is, but you get a sense of their hopelessness. One of the best pages in here is you see Bruce Banner sitting up at the atomic site where he got gamma rayed, and he says, "This is how I'm finally going to get you." And a silhouette of the Hulk just kind of being there, like, "This is how I'm going to destroy the Hulk, us ending." You see Hank, who are... talking to his younger self from the all-new X-Men past, younger Hank, and you see...
Hank the Beast. Not Hank the Ant-Man.
Yeah, I should have said that.
Okay.
Beast is talking to young Hank, that should have been more specific, about the conundrums that they've had and the moral dilemmas that they had of what they've done. And young Hank goes, why the fuck did you bring us to the future? If you knew this stuff was going on, if you knew that the world was going to end, why didn't you let us live our lives? And it's these sort of things going through here. You see, Reed just wants to go visit his daughter, who's currently living in Latveria. You see Iron Man drinking, or almost going to drink. It looks like he didn't. But all these people are so desperate. You have T'Challa, Black Panther, going and saying how much he loves Storm still, and blah, blah, blah.
Does Storm cry?
Yes.
Of course she does.
Yeah. Like rain running down her face. And then you get to that final moment, and then it doesn't happen. The incursion should have happened. They have it timed down, and then they're wondering what the hell happened. What they also realize is that if there's some other thing that can stop these incursions, they've had all their thoughts wrong, and those other planets that they did destroy might not have needed to be destroyed. And really, you need to... You don't even need to understand what's been going on just to get the depth of them thinking there's nothing we can do and realizing, though, there is some person that they can do. You get Black Bolt to actually kind of talk through sign language, and he's the one that realizes what might have actually saved the world, and that is the most awesome person in the world, Namor, and his cabal. He's gone out and started destroying these worlds. He's the one that says, this is what we need to do.
So you did. So they did have to destroy the worlds.
Yeah. So that kind of gives, you know, not the moral dilemma of could they have not done something else or this or that, but that you see that Thanos, the Black Glaive, Maximus.
Is that Morbius in there?
Where?
No. Right below Thanos? I can't.
That's one of his henchmen from... Infinity.
Oh, okay. I couldn't quite see from here. I was...
But now you start to see where some of these characters who were good might have start becoming a little bit evil, a little bit on a side of... Because these are technically the good guys. If they're saving the universe from destruction, doesn't that make them good?
Well, I was...
Question mark?
Are they good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's... Sounds like it's actually a fairly good idea there overall. Who wrote that one again, Tony? I know you said
Hickman.
Okay, yeah.
He's been just doing phenomenal work, and I just it's all just tying together. It's like a rug, man. It just ties it together.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough feng shui, Tony or Kevin. What do you got?
The other white guy.
Yeah, the other white guy here.
The other white meat.
So. For my pick off the shelf this week, I'm actually not going to the best of the week.
What?
Yeah. No disrespect to the title I'm going to be talking about. And I obviously we have a segment at the end of the show. Derek, what is that called? Last Call?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're finally learning something.
Yeah, I'm learning them. Manifest Destiny by Image.
Yeah.
Issue 9 came out. And you're talking about man crushes... I have one. I have a big man crush on Manifest Destiny. But I have to spread the love around. And I also got to talk to you. I got to talk to you and you about Black Market. Now, have you guys heard of Black Market?
I heard it. I haven't read it.
Okay, heard it.
I sold some kidneys once on the Black Market.
All right, you got an idea.
By the way, you still owe me my commission for that. And I need more ice. Getting cold in this bathtub.
Black Market 2, Boom Studios. Wow. Written by Frank J. Barbary. Art by Victor Santos. Colors by Adam Metcalf.
Okay.
You were coming dangerously close to my crotch or something.
Well, yeah, but you put the book in your crotch, and then that's just a nice imitation. So.
And the mental image that people now have of what the fuck are they doing
there? Oh my gosh,
there?
Yes. They should. So, if you're not familiar with Black Market, here's your quick synopsis. You have a medical practitioner. His name is Ray. He's somehow been coerced by his brother Denny to form a particular medical function for money. That function? To harvest some blood and some DNA from superhumans so they could sell it to various companies for profit.
Okay.
That sounds like actually a fairly smart idea.
I mean, outside
of pissing off a superhuman.
You would probably do that if they weren't volunteering. In issue two, they're talking more about the main characters in the backstory and how Ray, your main character, and his brother Denny went to recruit a former superhero to help collect volunteers, air quotes, for more of these DNA extractions. So this whole story so far is just incredible. I like the idea of the story. It makes sense. Like, okay, we don't, in Marvel and DC, we don't see much of the normal people.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening in this, is you're seeing this world from the perspective of normal people. And that has a great appeal to me. I've mentioned an independent book called The Adventures of Steve, where there was a big world of superhumans, but the main story was took place through the eyes of just a normal guy. And there's a great appeal to me. Now, in this book, normal people, they're just, it's all about them up front, taking the reins. And while the supers are just, they're just back, taking a backseat to the story, even though they're a pivotal part of the story. Yeah. Now, what Frank Barbary is doing here is just so, so damn good. The main character, Ray, he's going through all sorts of highs and lows, both professionally and personally. And as you're reading it, you're really feeling for the guy. Though I'm sure most of us aren't medical professionals or might not be married or whatever.
Or as Matt says, we aren't rocket surgeons.
I forget about that one.
Yeah.
But you really feel for the character. He's done a great job of connecting you to the character. And sort of dorky, but smart, relatable character. And that's what really is bringing this home, despite the premise is really good. So it all really connects for me. Victor Santos and Adam Metcalf, colors and artists. They just did a whiz bang job.
Whiz bang.
Yeah, whiz bang.
Yeah.
Okay.
You never heard whiz bang?
No.
You whippersnapper. Get off my lawn.
Bee's knees.
You ever heard of Maynard?
Yeah.
That's good stuff, Maynard.
Yeah. Nope.
Cut the mustard?
Nope.
Doesn't cut the mustard? No.
Oh, yeah, I think I might have heard that one.
Yeah. We'll tell you about it later because we have to take our take some of our things down the seamstress. I need my pantaloons pulled in a little.
No, while picking up some Ovaltine.
Yeah.
Consistent lines, great colors.
Nobody knows what the fuck we're talking about.
Oh, because we're fucking old as prehistoric dinosaur dung. That's where I was going.
But they
do a great job with colors. The shading really gets you in the mood for the storytelling. And the cover. I'm really digging the covers.
Yeah.
Did you see number one? Passed around number two earlier. But I don't know. There's a simplicity to the covers that I really like, and they need props to that.
You know, this is one of those books where I missed issue one when it came out because mm-hmm. it was one of those weird days where I was working out of town and didn't get back to the comic shop until late, and they were sold out of it already. And I was like, ah. I'm like, well, you know what? I'll pick it up and trade. And I'm glad that you actually brought this up because I've been sitting there going, huh, that looks like something interesting. But I wanted to talk to somebody about it, so I'm glad. Because the artwork is really pretty.
Yeah, it really is. Absolutely. And, I mean, I'm kind of giving a nod to the series thus far, but I mean, how can you? This is just a 4-part series from Boom Studios, and you really, I don't know. I have a hard time with especially a short mini series. If I'm going to mention two in this segment, I have to really tie in number one to it. So,
but
Boom Studios knocks it out of the park, and that's probably part of the reason why. I mean, they got that sign on from Fox.
Spoiler! That's for news later, you jerk.
Well, let's talk about news then.
All right, news. yeah. So, by the way, off the shelf, brought to you by Grant once again. So,
all right, Kevin, you got some news that you're going to share.
Well, I forgot our last mention. Sorry, Grand Con.
Oh, buy him a beer later when we go do our special interview.
Sure, yeah, that's coming up for our listeners later this week.
Mm-hmm. Boom Studios signed a television deal with 20th Century Fox. Nothing in particular as far as titles mentioned yet. But
no, but get them while they're young.
Yeah. I mean,
really, because the comic books are a hot commodity. There's, I mean, the value of the studios and the properties have never been higher. Might as well try to lock some of it down just in case the next Walking Dead or X-Men come around.
Well, you know, and the thing is, I mean, like with Boom, they've done such a fantastic job, I think, at getting some of the best young talent out there, you know, as far as both writers and artists all around. What they've done, the stuff that they've got is just amazing. It's some of the most original stuff that's out there. I mean, I keep praising Boom Studios every week, but I love what they do. So I'm excited to see. There are some in particular, some of their series that I could really see going to TV quickly. Then you have books like Six Gun Gorilla, which, boy, that would take a lot of CGI to do, but that was one of the coolest stories ever. But there's a definite end to a book like that. So
I will remember that guy that I think it's for Image, whatever, of talking about independent books and this and that, and we kind of got in a huge discussion of, mm-hmm. you know, like Transformers and all those other properties aren't original thought or original pieces of comic. Is this not the opposite then? That TV has no originality and these aren't?
I'll agree with that. TV and movies are pretty much, you know, and for years, for the most part, one of the best quotes I ever heard was when I was in college and I was in my film and video program at the time. There was a guy who worked in movies at the time and he said that television is nothing but a nightlight with sound, you know, as far as he was concerned. So, yeah, there really aren't any new original ideas coming, and that's one of the reasons why TV and movies are raping and pillaging whatever they can get out of comics, because you got a huge source pile of great material that's sitting there, and they're like, hey, look, we don't have to think. Somebody can think for us. Yay. Built-in audience. Yay. You know, there's a reason that they're doing that. But, yeah, you know, and then when you do try and come up with something original, you have a series like The Cape, you know, for your superhero.
Yeah, that was their attempt at Batman, I think.
Like funny Batman?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. But anyway.
They need to bring the Tick back.
There you go. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, congrats to Boom on getting that thing going. Other TV stuff. This isn't as heavily comic book related, but because they have tried to prove or disprove things that happen in comics, there's been a little shakeup over at the MythBusters TV show. So it appears that that Tori Belleci, Carrie Byron, and Grant Imahara are officially done with the Mythbusters show after about 10 years.
That show's still on?
Apparently it is.
Well, I mean, you can't ever... That show, you can't ever run out of ideas to test. And they've obviously... Their format's changed a bit to where they've broken up the two teams with these three. And then, now I'm forgetting the other guys' names.
Adam
and Jamie.
Yeah. This team was great, and I don't know, I guess, a hole in my heart now, finding out that they're going to be gone from my TV screen.
Well, you know,
I think they're just getting out while the iron is just cooling off. But
what are they going to go do? I mean, this is their life.
Same shit that they did before. They have real jobs.
Yeah, their options are limitless. Because, I mean, they're the recognized names. So, I mean, they could do public speaking. They could just take normal jobs.
I'm just saying, I think that they're a little typecast now, though.
And that's probably...
How are they typecast? They aren't actors.
But, because I just want to see them disprove shit. Or prove shit.
Okay, well, I got an idea. I'm a company. I need somebody that's really good at robotics. Hey, Grant, prove to me you can make a robot that I can make a profit on. Here's a check.
Okay. Yeah. I'm happy now to know that they are going to be okay.
Yeah, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. Kevin, I was curious maybe if I could borrow a couple bucks from you. Around...
All right, this is a little weird to be doing it on air, but
I'm not looking for much, just roughly $2.5 million.
In cash?
Well, I mean, you can write me a check. That's fine. Okay. Or wire, whatever.
Wire seems more secure.
Yeah. Because one of the 34 known copies of Action Comics #1 is finishing up its eBay run today.
Is it today?
It ends up
Sunday, right?
Yep. Today's Sunday when this podcast comes out. Which, when this podcast comes out, I think they're going to be done by that point, or probably pretty close. Last I looked, they were at $2.25 million for the top bid.
That's insane for a comic book. Anything, really, but...
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. There's only one other that has white pages like this one does. This is actually great.
Yeah, that's what blew me away about this whole deal going on, is that first of all, it's slabbed, and it has white pages.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't blame them for slabbing it. Something like this, you can't leave up to interpretation.
Sure.
Yeah.
When you're trying to sell it. This is one of those few ones where I'm like, okay, I get it. You got to slab this if you're going to sell it.
Well, here's the thing, though, I know that they're so rare and this and that, but, let's take a Civil War, medal or something, or a gun from a long time ago. How are these comics so much more than what that would go for on eBay or whatever?
Rarity.
But it's one-of-a-kind gun, or it's George Washington's wooden teeth or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Something like that would go, because it has a very historic value to it.
I know that, but I'm just saying, I don't see that getting as much as some of these comic books are, which is just, yes, they are rare, but fucking $2 million worth?
Here's part of the other thing, Tony. It's a paper product that has survived since 1937. You know, that is as good of a book that you could pick up on Wednesday.
But what is the person going to really take it out to read it?
Oh, you know, whoever has it, it'll just go in a vault someplace, and they
oh, just throw it in the pile.
So it's. Yeah. It's not even being bought for what it's worth, for what it is, it's for what it's worth.
So right now, I pulled up the listing. $2.3 million, $19.38.
Oh, so it jumped about $50K since I looked at it an hour or two ago.
Let's put a bid on just to see. Drawkind Comics, and we can go bankrupt.
Hey, I'm sure they'll have easy financing terms.
Oh, you know what? I got some discounts from PayPal. I bet you we could get that down to maybe $2.1 million by the time it's all said and done.
This is a big coupon.
Yeah. I've been saving for a while. I mean, PayPal loves me, man. I get tons of offers from them. Like, I think I'm pretty special.
No, I'm just thinking about, like, what would we get? Like, yeah, like a 50-year mortgage on this book? Payments would only be as low as, like, $20,000 a month.
We share it amongst each other. Like, Derek gets custody one day, you get custody the next.
The problem is, Tony, I see how you and your brother handle your comic books. You're not allowed to touch it. But, no, it was kind of interesting, though, that, like, the guy that originally had it had bought it when he was a kid, and he threw it in a cedar chest, and it had been, like, under a whole stack of other magazines, which kept the thing perfectly flat, no moisture whatsoever, no sunlight whatsoever. And then when somebody bought it, like, in a collection, the guy who bought it then had a cedar chest made basically exactly the same as what that guy did, and then stored it the same way. And then he finally just went to somebody and said, "Hey, you interested in buying this?" And
no kidding. Coincidentally, from the same seller, he's also selling a Spawn number one for $200.
What?
A Spawn number one, $200 from the same seller.
I just got one in the dollar bin.
This is a 9.8.
And?
I'm just reading you the listing.
Okay. So
that's hilarious. So yeah, get your bids in. Oh, I hope you got your bids in now.
Yeah. Or then. Because all of our many wealthy listeners.
Hey, you know.
Hey, we don't know. We know who some of them are. We don't know who all of them are.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you there's some really wealthy people out there that like our show.
Shark Tank.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe there's a shark watching us.
There could be. Chomp, 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 chomp.
Chomp, chomp.
All right.
What we got next?
Okay.
Bryan Singer decides to get a tattoo.
Yeah. He did get a tattoo. It was an X-Men tattoo. It was like, you know, something like he had a bet that, like, if they would make more than $700 million that he'd get an X-Men tattoo. And I just thought that it was cool that Patrick Stewart was there.
That's what I love the most. Is just Patrick Stewart is just, he just shows up and is just him. I would love to just have that life of just like, oh.
Hey, he's just loving life, man. What a life.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so he got and why he got it on his calf is beyond me.
Like, I don't know.
That's not a comfy place to get one either.
No, but I mean, at least it's clean and it looks good.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's block, like a block, circle X, thing. One other little note regarding Bryan Singer. I don't want to get into too much detail on this, but. For those that had been following it, he'd been accused of sexual abuse, actually by a couple people. One was already dismissed, that was the second case.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and then there was the original case, which was out of Hawaii, a guy had accused him and a couple other people. The other cases, I think, have already been dismissed, and now the guy who filed the suit is seeking to have the case dismissed. Dismissed without prejudice, meaning that he could file it again later. But it's basically because he's having a hard time finding somebody to represent him. His lawyers, I think, from the sounds of it, more or less fired him. You guys can go read the details. I am not laying judgment until it's ruled on, but it was worth mentioning that it looks like all this stuff might be finally coming to an end. So. Tony, what else was out there that you saw?
DC has a Rock.
Yeah?
Yep. Named Dwayne. Dwayne the Rock Johnson has just announced that he is going to play one of two characters. And this is where I don't know necessarily how much truth to be said that he's actually just been given. You can either be Shazam or Black Adam. You pick. He's saying, though, that he feels more towards the anti-hero, so he wants to play Black Adam. I don't know those studio heads that would just say you could play both roles.
Well, no, you don't get to play both. You get to play one or the other. Yeah. Because that would be just stupid. I mean, like that'd be like the Parent Trap or something like that. Who'd see that? Never mind. I'm old.
No, hey. All right, so who would you guys rather have him see him play, Shazam or Black Adam?
Tooth Fairy.
Two?
Yeah. I don't really know who Black Adam is, so I can't say.
He's bad Shazam.
Yeah. But not evil.
So he is...
Well, yeah, he is a bad guy, though.
Oh, God, yeah, he is. He's a badass. He was a badass in the Forever Evil series, and then in the new Shazam that came out. Yeah, he's just total... I mean, he's always been a hard ass, but he is your typical bad guy in the movies. That's exactly who he would play. But I would like to see him take that type of role, because the last time he played an antagonist was what, Scorpion King?
Yeah,
and I think that was probably one of his better roles.
Well, that was like his first, like,
yeah, that was his first
jump
first...
into his first foray into Hollywood.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah. I don't know. Oh, I mean, definitely. I'm still kind of mixed about him being in the show in the first place, but if he's going to be, Black Adam's the way I would lean.
Well, it also kind of gives, you know, more knowledge of some more of the movies that DC may be coming out, because although they've slated many different dates, some of them are up in the air. You know, we now know, I think last week that they said an Aquaman standalone movie is going to happen. But with speculation, well, fuck, this might not even be a Shazam movie. It could just be him in the DC Justice League, a.k.a. Batman vs. Superman 2.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, we'll have to see. You know, he's...
Was it like wait like 5-6 years?
Yeah, well...
To figure it out.
Well, he's got the option, you know, which is kind of cool for him. I can be Shazam, I can be Black Adam. Kind of like when Spider-Woman number 1 comes out, you can pick up the regular cover... Or you can pick up the cover that's being donned as being evil by lots of people out there in the world.
Well, Kitty. Well, I mean, for those people, can you blame them? I mean, if you haven't seen it, listeners, you have Spider-Woman. She's basically bent over with her ass sticking up in the air. And, I don't know, what does her ass look like to you?
Well, it looks like
the top of an apple.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's a little gapish, you know. But here's the thing. Yeah, there's a place for all this kind of art. I don't know if it's necessarily the right one for this, when it was Marvel's big push on the, you know, Women of Marvel panel.
Yeah, whoever made this decision is probably fired.
I doubt it. Because, but see, now Milo Manara, who is the artist...
This is the dumbest, though, thing to... If you're pushing women and everything, and then you're going to put this on a cover, really, that person has no sense.
Well,
I guess the only thing I can think of is, okay, this is a variant cover. So, is this one of those variants where it had such a low run... The shop owners only get like 1 out of 100.
It's probably going to be like a 1 out of 20, 1 out of 50,
and then it might not even make its way to the shelf. And they're like, okay, well, the retailers will get it, and they won't display it as normal, so no big deal. But everything is, if you release something, everyone's going to know about it,
right? Well, the criticism here is that Milo Manara, who is the artist, is very well known for his erotic style drawings. He's incredibly good at what he does. But I don't know. I guess I don't see the issue with it, but I've always been the kind of guy where it's like, you know what? If you don't like something, don't buy it. You don't like something, walk away. I mean, it's not, I guess for me, I don't see how this is hurting anyone. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see how
that's tough to say. I mean, and for some people, it might be enough to be like, you know what? I'm not gonna take a look at, looking at Marvel in entirety. That might be tough. They probably, you know, some people might be like, I don't even really want to bother with Spider-Woman now.
Yeah.
Especially females.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I mean, it's me. I don't take shit personally like that, so I have a harder time understanding how people do.
Sure. Well, I mean, definitely this is going to be more of an issue for women. than the males.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, something. Now, Minara responded. His response is
no,
hard.
He's
Italian.
Okay, yeah. I thought he was not American.
Yeah. He responded, and he kind of responded to both things. A lot of people are criticizing, saying that it's not anatomically correct, that a woman wouldn't bend like that, blah, blah, blah. He is saying, look, if she was kind of crawling up and over and doing this, yes, this would be the appropriate thing, you know, with her form. Yeah, I can't say. I don't really know because I'm not, you know, I don't specialize in that kind of stuff. But, you know, his other spot was that people were offended because, you know, it looks like she's just painted on. But he said something, and this is going to sound weird, but it was translated from Italian, I think, using like Google Translator, which, you know, is perfect. But basically what he said was superheroes are like that. They're naked, some sort of painted. Superman is naked, painted in blue. Spider-Man is naked in red and blue. Spider-Woman is painted red. But these are sort of elements, part of the trick, so to speak, that publishers use to create these nude figures, on which I don't find anything wrong. But there is no real nudity. If we look at them later in the inside stories, going beyond the cover, these are characters whose bodies are in view. So he does have a little bit of a point there. You know, the problem here is that because of the fact that every superhero like this that's wearing a skin-tight suit, you're running that gray line, that gray area, where it's going to be one side or the other, you know, before it's too much or it's safe. So,
you know, I was just looking over some of his past work. You know, at least he stays consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here, I just went to just Wikipedia real quick, and yeah. On Wikipedia, if you look up Milo Minerva, you'll see a picture very similar to the Spider-Woman number one variant. So, he's consistent over the years.
Yeah.
And he's an older gentleman.
Now, I would not blame Milo on this one, but if people do want to blame somebody, then I personally think that they should find out why Marvel went with this option.
Yeah, well said.
So, you know, I mean, he was doing what he was commissioned to do. So,
let's see, we should,
there's one other Marvel thing that I wanted to bring up.
You're talking about the artist?
Well, it depends on which artist, but there was a family, in South Carolina that a tree branch fell and hit their young 3-year-old son who was playing in a park, and unfortunately the little boy passed away from the injuries on there.
Jacoby Latta.
Yeah. And I guess he was a happy little 3-year-old that loved Captain America, and he dressed up like Captain America and always wanted to pretend to be Captain America. And the family reached out to an artist by the name of Sanford Green, and they knew that Green was an artist and that he had connections with other artists and stuff. What they didn't know is that Green is somehow working on Uncanny Avengers. And so kind of as, you know, a little in memoriam, honorarium type thing, they're going to draw the little boy, Jacoby, into the issue of Uncanny Avengers that's coming out here next week. So, you know, where I think it's going to be, he'll actually be getting to meet, you know, these characters. I just thought that was a really nice story. I mean, especially after we heard about, you know, the little boy's statue with the Superman logo on it and all that. I think that's it's nice. You know, it's tough because, you know, yes, you want to do things like these whenever you can, but, you know, at the same time, too, it's like, oh boy, did you just open the floodgates for everybody that's going to want something for their little boy in there? But you know, thumbs up, Marvel, on doing something nice like that for a family. Last thing I had was there's a new comic coming out from Image, from writer Michael Stock and our good buddy Cena Grace on art, called Penny Dora and the Wishing Box. And it's going to be like an all-ages comic, which started out from an 8-year-old writing a short story. And it was, you know, the child of Michael Stock, who wrote it, it was his daughter, wrote it, and so he kind of just elaborated on it. But it looks actually pretty darn fun, and if you go to herocomplex.latimes.com, you can find a link on there. And there are some preview pages in there as well. That this is some of the best work that Cena's ever done, and I'm a huge fan of his work, so that's saying a lot. It's a new style for him too. I mean, it's clearly him. I don't know, Tony, if you got to see the pages.
Yeah.
It's clearly his work, but there's a whole new layer in there that I hadn't seen before. So that was everything for me. Did you guys have anything else on news this week?
No, that covers a lot of it.
All right, cool. Where are we at, Tony?
We should be riding the Indy Turnpike.
Riding down the Indy Turnpike?
Yeah. All
right, cool. Indy Turnpike this week is brought to you by DawApparel.com. Go there, use the code DOC20, get 20% off your entire order, which should have some kind of Drunk on Comics t-shirts there. And want to give a little shout-out to our buddy Linz for wearing our shirt down at Chicago, at Wizard World Chicago this weekend. She tweeted out a picture, you know, saying, repping my boys at Wizard World Chicago. I was like,
oh, hell yeah.
I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, that's what I'm talking about. So, anyway, and if any of you guys else out there are wearing our t-shirts, send pictures. We like to see. So, this week for Indy Turnpike, we have The Fade Out, number one from Image. And this is written by Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips, colors by Elizabeth Breitweiser. And I got the large format version, which is like a magazine size format.
Sure. So did you get a magazine bag for it?
Yes. It did come with a magazine bag.
Good.
This book, now, this size costs an extra dollar, though, for the larger format, which I don't mind. But there's also, there's actually more content in the back on this one than there was in the regular. Oh,
wow, that's really cool.
So I'm like, that's cool. And there's actually so much in here, I haven't even gotten through all the content in the back. But this is a story that takes place, you know, back in the 40s, like right after Pearl Harbor had been attacked, and it deals with people in the Hollywood world. And the basic premise here is that, you know, you have one guy in here who is, you know, Charlie Parrish. He is kind of your main character, or the central character. And he wakes up in a woman's apartment who is a star, like a little Hollywood starlet, and she's been strangled to death. And he gets out of there, and then all of a sudden everybody and he's trying to remember what happened because he was at a party, he got completely blown out, which we know nothing about that. And then reports come out that she's died, and all of a sudden, it's not that she got strangled to death. They went in, moved her body, made it look like she hung herself and committed suicide. The studio did all this so that the quote-unquote like moral police won't come down on them and this and that. And so it's just a really, really well-written story that has a lot of great character development in here, where you're starting to see, okay, you've got all kinds of different people at work trying to protect their investments, trying to do this, and, you know, you're going to have one guy who actually knows the truth, and right at the end, he spills the beans to his buddy.
Okay.
And so now the question is who's going to come after him, kind of, because you know at some point word's going to get around, because once he says something to somebody, it's all done. So, beautiful, beautiful artwork in here, though, from Phillips, and the colors by Elizabeth Breitweiser. They really do a nice job, like, just kind of...
Yeah, it almost has a kind of, like, slightly more modern feel to, like, Watchmen to it. A little bit. If I were to kind of draw parallels.
It definitely has, like a film noir quality feeling.
Oh, yeah,
it definitely, sure, though, is a lot of content for your, you know, more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even get the chance to finish it because there's just so much there.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I didn't count pages, but you know, I mean, I paid $5.99 for this. I didn't count pages, but it seems like it's a hell of a lot longer than a 22-page book. I don't know if it is, but that's what it felt like. So yeah, I mean, like, if you guys want to go check something out that's new and cool and it feels fresh, like, because you know how, like, a lot of times you're getting these new stories and it seems like, oh, this is fun. I think I've read it before.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't. I mean, this one definitely has a sense of, has new car smell to it, I guess. You know,
I love putting this book in my hands. It's so, it's, you know, there's something really cool about it.
There's a lot of weight to it, like physical weight. It's good, yeah, heavy quality, absolutely, stock. The magazine format was made to look like one of those old, like, you know, Hollywood magazines that's talking about, you know, it's got like almost like the movie poster cover on it, and it's cracked and water stained looking. And had I not been talking about this, this is what I probably would have picked for best on tap for best cover, mm-hmm, of the week. Mm-hmm. But this one just ran away with the show. I know, Kevin, your Black Market one ran away with the show for you for best covers.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I didn't really have a good vote, but a lot of fun. This is definitely something that you can dive into. And I mean, this was the first book I read and it absorbed so much of my time.
Oh, sure.
On Wednesday night that I ended up only reading one other book. And I don't know if it's because this book was so good or if it just happens, but I had a decent stack. And with the exception of a couple books, Daredevil being one and a few more that I'll list off here at the end, every other book this week I was disappointed in, and I think a lot of it had to do with how good The Fade Out was. That it set the bar so high, mm-hmm, as the first book I read this week that everything else was a bit of a letdown. So that was it for Indie Turnpike.
All right. Booze in the Book this week. It's more or less for the title of the reason why, but at the same point, it's also the timing, and it is the Multiversity number one, because right now kids are getting ready to go back to school and I'm starting to reminisce about college, and in college there's a drink in particular that you could have when you were out at Grand Valley State University, and that is called a pink drink. A pink drink is a concoction of 6 clear shots all put into a mini pitcher with pink lemonade, and you get it slushied or just regular. You are limited to 2, because 1 will get you drunk, 2 will get you passed out drunk. Like, it's...
What will 3 get you?
There have been...
Ambulance ride?
Pretty much so. I mean, it's so good. And so I know it has nothing to do with what's in the book. The Multiversity made me start thinking of college, and I started thinking of that drink, and I was like, ooh, let's go have a pink drink.
I don't understand how the Multiversity made you think of college, though.
Because university... Multiversity, the verse, pretty much is the versity.
All right.
I guess I could have started thinking of diversity too, and anything else with SD, but
what was the booze for last week? It seems very similar to the two.
The booze last week was truth serum.
What was in the truth serum?
It was like all different kinds of booze with anise and lemonade.
Okay.
On top of it.
Well, mine's pink.
Not anise.
So it's totally different.
What's the green fairy? Absinthe.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. It's kind of like Tony just stole my
booze and look from last week.
All right. Yeah. And then next week it's going to be a Purple Rain, which it's. That's 6 different kinds of clear booze.
We're just going to change the color of what it is.
Some sour mix and a little bit of Chambord in there, too.
And then we'll do something with fruit punch and add a bunch of different shots.
Yeah, it's going to be Long Island the week after. And, you know, following week it's trash can party. You just throw all that shit in there and swim your way out. Yeah. Jungle Juice. That's the following week.
I haven't been a long time since I had one of those.
Yeah. Of the bartender's rag. We should do one of those.
Derek, you're giving away all my booze and books that I'm doing for the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Tony. You guys got anything for last call? Maybe? No?
Well, I mean, you guys have already mentioned them, like Multiversity.
Did we actually say Manifest Destiny?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Manifest Destiny.
The Wicked and the Divine, The Life After. Those two, I have to say, pick them up and read.
Tony, I'm curious to talk about Wicked and the Divine with you later. I'd chat for another time that maybe we'll carry over till next week to next week's episode. Tony, you didn't mention Translucid. Did you miss it?
I missed it.
The hell?
I need to make sure I get more books on my pull to actually get them.
Yeah.
Because that was not there when I saw it.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, there's only so many of them, but, yeah. That's, our store is great, which, shout out to our store, Fanfare Sports and Entertainment in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Those guys are so awesome. But if you don't tell them, they aren't fucking mind readers. Mm-hmm. So, there's only one issue left after this one. Magneto, number 8, and Trees, number 4. Those were my top picks.
I got another one. Little Nemo, Return to Slumberland.
Is that a drink?
No.
I did see that.
Yeah. So you guys remember Little Nemo at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the only reason why I know about it is because of the probably one of the top 20 NES games. Great game, but the story of Little Nemo dates back to the teens. And this is kind of a...
And his Lucky Finn. And Ellen DeGeneres hangs out with him and tries to...
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming.
Why do you guys are just random words out of your mouth right
mine,
now.
Mine.
Cock.
No.
You...
Finding Nemo?
I never saw the movie.
What? Yeah, all right, so...
Added to the list of movies I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's In Fault of Fish.
At the end of Finding Nemo, Nemo marries Chubb's alligator. So.
I don't even know what the fuck I'm remembering anymore of that movie.
You're watching the XXX rated parody version of Happy Gilmore.
All right, guys, should we wrap it up?
Let's do it.
All right, keep reading your comic book, kids. We will be back next week to talk to you more about them then. And don't forget, Grand Con special coming up later this week. See ya.